Welcome to this AAT podcast. Today, I'm going to take a look at the online VAT services provided by HMRC and highlight some of the main features, opportunities and pitfalls associated with them. At present, the online service provides a range of functions available to businesses. Use of the majority of these is optional, and so it is up to each registered business to decide whether to use them or not. The only online service which is compulsory is online filing of VAT returns, which applies to all businesses with a turnover in excess of £100,000 per annum, and also for smaller businesses that have registered or will register after the 1st of April last year, 2010. This will change next year. From the 1st of April 2012, all VAT registered businesses will have to file online VAT returns regardless of turnover. So those smaller businesses that currently submit paper returns will have to make a change at that date. Also, from 1st of August 2012, all variations to business details, such as change of address, will need to be notified online. Currently, it is possible to make these notifications online, but only once you are authorised. Otherwise, notifications are by post. Hopefully, this will not pose too many problems, but care is needed to ensure that everything is in place to comply in good time. One practical point is that when you apply for VAT registration online, you are given the option of signing up for a variety of services all at the same time. If you tick the box to elect to notify business changes online, then you are required to notify online for the future. If you neglect to tick this box, then any notifications will be on paper, though of course, as we've just said, this will change from August next year. The difficulty with this is that when you sign up online, you are automatically given your registration number. You are activated immediately for filing VAT returns. As such, many businesses feel that they've done as much as they need to do. However, shortly after registration, you will receive an authorisation code in the post. This authorisation code needs to be activated within 30 days in order to set up the account fully. If this is not done, then activating further services later on will not be possible. You will therefore have to notify again and get a further activation code, and this could take some time. Because some businesses have not realised this, they will need to go through this process before they can comply correctly next year. Of course, some things like notifying HMRC of changes such as office moves is a legal requirement, and failure to do so can result in all manner of problems and indeed penalties. If nothing else, HMRC will cease making VAT returns available to you if you do not inform them that you have moved. I recently got involved with a company that was struggling in the recession. It was behind with its VAT and agreed time to pay with HMRC. It also sought new, cheaper premises in order to reduce costs. It moved, but forgot to tell HMRC. 4 months later, it ran into further financial difficulty and missed 1 month's payment to HMRC. They sent an officer from their debt management team around to see them to find out what the problem was, and of course they went to the old address. Being unable to locate the company, they placed them on a missing trader list and suspended the VAT registration. This meant that when the next return was due, there was no open return online to complete. It then took 3 months to get HMRC to reinstate the registration and get the returns up to date. Whilst there was no financial penalty involved, there was a huge amount of time taken up in negotiations with HMRC and getting the matter resolved. This was time which the business could not really afford when it was struggling financially anyway, and the directors needed to be concentrating on profitability, not administration. Ensuring that these little administrative details are correct at the beginning will save a lot of time later on. So what are the main online services available at the moment? VAT registration is perhaps the first one that most businesses will come across. It can be applied for online, or it can still be tackled using the paper forms. Simple registrations, which involve most businesses, are probably best done online as they are very straightforward and very efficient. But anything complicated might be best kept on paper for now. The reason I say that is there is still no facility in the online application form for attaching documentation to show intention to trade or backing up other statements which have been made on the form. This means that it can take longer to get the registration in place, as the documentation has to be sent separately, and HMRC are not great at getting the application and supporting documents to the same place for processing. As we have said, the only compulsory service at present is filing of VAT returns. Once VAT registered, a VAT return will appear on the online service as it falls due. It will be open and available for submission once the period has ended, and will stay open until it has been completed and submitted. Online filing gives an automatic submission deadline extension of 7 days. Note that this is 7 calendar days, not 7 working days. For those businesses still submitting paper returns, the deadline is still the end of the month following the end of the period. As an example, a business submitting a VAT return ending on the 31st of March has a 30th of April deadline if it is submitting paper returns. If it elected to submit VAT returns online, it would have until the 7th of May, the extra 7 days. Submitting online, therefore, can be better for cash flow, and of course the extra 7 days can be useful for the practical purpose of getting the figures together. Also, remember HMRC's changed policy on when payments are received by them for the purposes of compliance. A business must render its VAT return and have payment with HMRC by the due date. If it does not, it leaves itself open to a default surcharge penalty, which can be very expensive. In the good old days, all you had to do was to get the cheque to them by the due date. You now have to get it to them in time for them to bank it and have cleared funds in their account by the due date. As it usually takes 3 days to clear a cheque, and you have to allow for postal and processing delays, it is probably prudent to have the VAT return in the postbox a week before the due date. It should be stressed at this point that whilst you get an extra 7 days for online filing, we need to be a little bit careful about electronic payments as well. It is a condition of filing online that any payment due is also made electronically and is received within the 7-day extension. Paying electronically can be subject to the same pitfalls as paying by cheque, so do be careful. Payment through the CHAPS mechanism is usually instantaneous, happening on the same day, and therefore the payment can be made on the 7th day. Payment by one of the direct credit routes, however, can also take 3 days, just like a cheque, and therefore the system needs to be initiated in good time. Direct debit is also worth considering. The payment is taken automatically from your bank account, so you can't forget it, and the payment is taken on the 3rd working day following the 7-day extension, so you get at least 10 days extra in which to file your VAT return and make payment. One final point, which has only recently been clarified, concerns repayment returns. The rules were always written in such a way as to imply that the 7-day extension was only available if both return and payment were made electronically. This seemed to suggest that a repayment return could not benefit from the 7-day extension, as there was no associated payment being made. HMRC have now accepted that online repayment returns can still benefit from the extension. Whilst a victory for common sense, this overlooks a couple of important points. Firstly, This was only of relevance to businesses that normally paid HMRC and then submitted an occasional repayment return. If this return was late, they could trigger a penalty. The reason that this was important only for that type of business is that a genuine repayment trader, i.e. those businesses recognised by HMRC as ones which regularly will be repaid, have their account with HMRC set up with a marker which takes them outside of the default surcharge regime, so any late return does not create a penalty anyway. As a result of this, it doesn't matter where the deadline is, at the end of a month, 7 days in or 10 days in, the late return would never be penalised. Secondly, of course, any sensible business that is due a repayment of tax should ensure that its returns are submitted as early as possible anyway to speed up the arrival of the funds. Which reminds me to say something about HMRC's current speed on making repayments. In an attempt to assist the Treasury's cash flow, it is clear that many repayments are taking longer to be made. Mainly, this is only a day or two, and this doesn't create too many problems, and there's nothing you can do about it anyway. However, there have been more recent cases where HMRC have either simply delayed the repayment for a long, long time, or have asked for explanations of figures and then taken an excessive length of time to clear the return prior to repayment. An example of this was a builder client of mine. The majority of their activity is new build residential. Virtually all of their income is therefore zero rated, and therefore they always show a repayment. The November return in 2010 showed a large repayment due to them of around £64,000, which was a little higher than usual. The return was submitted on the 12th of December, and HMRC contacted us on the 18th, asking to see some copy invoices, and also asking for a brief statement about the company's activity in the period, which gave rise to the repayment. This was all supplied to them in an email on the 21st of December. Having heard nothing from them, we called on the 23rd of December and again on the 4th of January, and on each occasion we were told that the matter was under review, the information had been received, and that we would be informed in due course of any decision. Despite chasing, there was no further correspondence, and full repayments was finally made on the 20th of January. From submission of the return, which was on time and accurate, it took 39 days to get the refund, which was far more than my clients had been expecting. Normally, their repayments come through within 10 to 15 days. This had meant that they had run out of money and had to take out some interim borrowing. We looked at the length of time that HMRC had taken and decided that it was excessive, and therefore we applied to them for a 5% repayment supplement to be added. Don't forget that if HMRC take more than 30 days to make a refund, they have to consider making a payment supplement. They don't always do this automatically, so do keep a very close eye on how long they take, as otherwise you could miss out. They are allowed to stop the clock, as it were, so that some periods of time do not count towards the 30 days. The main reason that they can stop the clock is for the raising and answering of reasonable inquiries into the return. In this case, they had contacted my clients on the 18th of December. It is reasonable to assume that HMRC probably took the decision to query the repayment a day or two before actually contacting the business. This doesn't really explain their reluctance to pay the supplement. The payment was 39 days in the making. Even taking out 2 days before contact and the 3 days taken in answering the queries, that still leaves 34 days before repayment was made. HMRC tried to argue that they could also remove days for the time spent by them in looking at the responses. This is incorrect. It has in fact been tested before the courts and has been rejected by the tribunals. And therefore, if HMRC try this argument with you, it should be countered vigorously. The legislation is quite clear that it states that the time to be taken out is for the raising and answering of queries. It doesn't say anything about time for HMRC to spend thinking about what those answers mean. We therefore stuck to our guns and gained the 5% supplement for the business. A little over £3,200 was gained, and this was rather more than the cost of the interim borrowing. A good result, but one we'd rather not have had to go through at all. Always keep an eye on the length of time taken to make repayments and claim a supplement where it's due. That has taken us a little away from the online filing topic, but we have covered the main points anyway. The main services are registration and the rendering of VAT returns. Changing business details comes in on a compulsory basis next year and is possible already. The other two services which a lot of businesses use are firstly the submission of European sales listings for those businesses with EU trade. Some businesses are still submitting these on paper forms, but the online system works well and there is little cause for complaint with it. The final service, which is worth highlighting, is the EU VAT refund system. The system was implemented with effect from the 1st of January 2010. There were some teething problems, which meant that some member states were not fully ready to operate the system properly at that time. The new system, in theory, means that claims need to be made within 9 months of the year end, and therefore any claims for the year 2009 should have been made by the 30th of September last year, 2010. However, because of the teething problems, that deadline was extended to the 31st of March, 2011, just gone. The next deadline will be the 30th of September 2011, in a few months' time, for those 2010 claims. It looks at this point in time that the member states have finally got their systems ready, and therefore that deadline looks likely to remain. So do make sure that any claims for 2010 are made in good time to reach HMRC before the September deadline. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast.